They did, dude. Hari Kari, all the way through.
They did something. This is the Clear Cash Podcast. I'm Julian, and as always, I'm here with Nick.
Hello.
And there's a lot going on this week, but the focus for this episode is loot boxes, a little bit of DLC action.
They're all anyone fucking cares about right now.
Yeah, dude. It's crazy. We've seen some crazy stuff happen this week. Related to Star Wars Battlefront 2 in particular, and how EA is dealing with the fallout from that. It's been all over the place. But the common consensus, the common thought right now is anger, frustration, mm-hmm.
The usual stages of grief.
Exactly. And have you followed this EA thing closely?
It transpired so quickly that I've only read it in retrospect.
Yeah. I mean, we're in I want to say day three of it right now. It's been pretty heavy duty,
For sure.
So this all stems out from Battlefront 2 and the loot box fiasco, right? Mm-hmm. And how that affects the game. And, so do you know how it works in the game?
Yeah, I played the beta. And you played the beta too.
Yeah, we played it together.
Yeah. So you earn a variety of different currencies and leveling stats through playing the game, both through skill and time. Mm-hmm. And with those currencies, you can purchase loot boxes, which is just randomly selected perks for various characters you can play as, classes you can play as, weapons you can use, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And so you can't play Vader, all right? And that's what we're pissed about. That's why we got our pitchforks out, because we want to play Vader, we want to play Luke, and we simply cannot.
The game
is telling us we cannot. We have to invest our time and our money to play as Big Daddy Vader and his baby son Luke.
Mm-hmm.
No, seriously,
play their pet Yoda.
their little swamp rat Yoda. No, people. Did you see that people did the math actually to see how long, money versus time, how long it would take to invest?
Yeah, it's wild. It's 40 hours, I think.
Yeah, they calculated it at 40 hours per. The top level heroes, right? So to unlock Vader and unlock Luke, it's 40 hours of grinding.
Yeah, or, to be clear, the characters, the hero characters like Vader and Luke are accessible either at a specific state in the game that you play or in certain game types where everybody is a hero character.
Right.
Anyway.
And I think to unlock a single one of those heroes before, I think, and EA has made changes, right? Not enough, apparently.
We'll get to that.
I think it was about 200 or something odd dollars randomized too. You're not even guaranteed anything that you would have to spend to unlock one of those characters, which is pretty mind boggling even for me. And I have nothing at stake here. I was never going to probably invest much time in Battlefront 2 other than the beta and maybe playing the trial, cause I have EA access. Mm-hmm. I was not interested in playing the game. So I've purely observed this as it's gone down, and
right.
But I can agree that I think that is pretty preposterous to constrain your community and your players with that.
It's a nakedly cynical thing. It's on its face, it is a money grabbing maneuver. It's gross. I don't feel exceptionally strongly about this game. I played the beta, I didn't like it very much. Mm-hmm. But if I did feel very strongly about Star Wars, or if Vader was in fact my father and I wanted to play as him, then this would be a huge bummer.
It would. Is separating fathers and sons
and
more
boyfriends.
Than they
realize. If Kylo Ren was my boyfriend, that
exactly.
would be really sad for me too.
He would be in the other room just throwing a huge force fit throwing mm-hmm. stuff across the room angrily.
Big mess again.
Huge mess. There goes all the succulents you got them last week. Smashed.
Can I apologize to the neighbors
once again. It's pretty crazy, and so that's why we wanted to kind of discuss the history of loot boxes themselves and where this all comes from, and what EA has gotten themselves into at this stage. They themselves being a driving force on the whole gimmick of it. Because they're actually. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes. For once in your life, you may speak.
This is the first time I've been able to go ahead.
I'm relinquishing the host title that I always hold
thank
for you.
Okay. Here I go. I'm going ahead. So EA kind of brought this to American audiences in a big way when they released this Mass Effect 3. Because Mass Effect 3 was the first major console release and AAA release to include a loot box system that featured randomized gear that would affect the way you played their multiplayer extension of Mass Effect 3, which was new to the Mass Effect series. They hadn't done online multiplayer before then. And it's actually straight up just known that Mass Effect 3 and BioWare and EA, they decided that they were going to implement this as a way to supplement the funds that they needed to spend to craft the online multiplayer and keep it running. That's just a known fact that they did that. So they created a loot system pretty much modeled exactly after another EA title, a sports title called FIFA, you know, the soccer game. Mm-hmm. FIFA had been doing something, I think, for a couple years before called FIFA Ultimate Team. And what that is a online multiplayer mode in which you buy packs, much like you would buy like a pack of Magic the Gathering or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or something. And from that, you gain soccer players that you can use on your online team and play against other people. And there would be like special cards. The cards were different rated, so some were better than others. Of course, like the superstar players or the top rated players. And so FIFA had been doing that. The FIFA games have been doing that for a couple years, and BioWare pretty much modeled and worked with the FIFA team to model that that loot box system, that card system, directly after the FIFA Ultimate Team.
Yeah, EA has been leading the charge on post-purchase monetization since, 2008-ish, 2009.
Yeah.
They started with the online pass concept in Mass Effect 2. And this was a system by which when you purchased the game, it came with a card that had a code on it, and the code effectively granted you access to the online component of whatever game you were purchasing. And then the principle or the concept was that you would then sell the game to GameStop, and then another person would buy that game, but they would then not have access to the online component. So that person would then have to buy the online pass in order to play the online element of the game.
Right. That's a controversial thing, right? I mean,
totally.
I feel like that was a topic that was also debated pretty heavily within the community, gaming community. Excuse me.
No doubt. I mean, like post-purchase monetization is always contentious. Everybody remembers Team Fortress 2 Hats. That's like the biggest initial push for effectively loot crates, stuff like that,
right?
Randomized contents. I think Team Fortress was calling them supply crates,
right?
And they also have weapons, I think, that have unique attributes to them. I didn't follow that.
Yeah, I didn't get into Team Fortress 2 all that much. But I can say, like, in terms of loot crates themselves and where that kind of originally comes from, I think it can be traced back to a certain game that I think it was like 2007 it came out in China. It was a Chinese-made game released, I think, only in China. And the thought process behind the creation of a loot box or buying your way into randomized loot comes from the original idea that you would have in an MMO or online RPG, where you know, it's the original loot system, right? Where you get a treasure chest full of random stuff.
You kill a dude in Diablo and he drops some random shit.
Yeah, exactly. And so this original game just monetized that and said, okay, well, you can go play our game and find them randomly, or you can just buy as many as you want, you know? Right. And that's where the original idea comes from.
Well, I think it's contentious for a lot of people because people get fulfillment from achieving things in video games, from empowering themselves through leveling up, getting better gear through leveling up, and purchasing skips for that progress kind of cheapens the whole experience, and mm-hmm. in some cases, like, directly minimizes the experience by granting other players in multiplayer games the ability to just purchase better shit than you because they can afford to. And I think a lot of people take umbrage with that. I also think that a lot of people who follow video games very closely are not particularly wealthy people. I think a lot of them are young mm-hmm. and can't afford to participate in these systems in that way. So they feel especially slighted and probably personally attacked by systems like this because they clearly are not being catered to. Right. And I think that's, you know, I think that frustration is justified in a way. I personally think it's like, I observe it from afar because I just don't participate in these systems. Mm-hmm. And if they're necessary to play the game, I just won't fucking play them. And mm-hmm. I don't feel very strongly about that. There are tons of fucking games to play.
Yeah. That's very true. I mean, the whole discussion is on, like, where the line is drawn on what is acceptable monetization of a video game, right? If someone draws a line at just the $65 retail price and that's it, that's all they want to spend, or if they're mm-hmm. comfortable with buying in the next three DLCs that come out for it, if it's a game that does that, you know, which has been going on for a long time. I mean, we've had... I feel like most AAA titles, whether it be an Assassin's Creed, a Call of Duty, for years now, everyone knows that most of these games offer a season pass for 30 to, you know, 20, 30 bucks that includes four extra DLCs, or you can buy them on, you know, your own. Sometimes these cost way more than 20 or 30 bucks. Mm-hmm. And that's also been something that's been contentious is DLC. And loot box stuff kind of fits in with that, you know? It's that same, like, where do you think that it's okay to stop spending money on a video game?
Yeah, well, I think there's a disparity between there's an enormous disparity between what developers are communicating to their audience about the cost of games, which video game players are very interested in understanding, and what game players are assuming is true about game development cost. I mean, you know, when in the Super Nintendo age, cartridges were expensive, and certain cartridges had certain physical elements in them that cost more, and those games would then cost more if they had required more memory. I think Chrono Trigger is a particular example of a game that required more memory and therefore cost more. I think it was like $80 mm-hmm. for a copy of Chrono Trigger. And we're talking about like fucking 1994.
Fuck, could right? you imagine being a kid and trying to explain, you know, in like 1994, trying to explain to your mom why fucking Chrono Trigger is $80 instead of 40 like the other games, or 50, whatever they were?
Well, dude, like, games have been 50, 60 bucks for
a long time.
Going on like 30 years now.
Yeah, not much has changed in that regard, which is surprising.
Except for inflation and the cost of game development.
Yeah.
And players are not generally people who take particular issue with the cost of games are not being cognizant of the fact that game development prices far exceed movie production or are otherwise like a factor of 10 greater than what they cost in fucking like 2001, you know? With the increase in technology and the increase in the capability of that technology, the art assets, the programming that is put into developing those games is like astronomical, and the game prices have not increased to match.
But if you just even just look at Battlefront 2, for example, like that game is incredibly detailed, gorgeous, and like no one can slight it for that.
It's stunning.
It's incredibly, it's one of the most gorgeous pieces of video game entertainment you can have available to you right now.
Yeah.
It is crazy to see. And it was same was the first one, Battlefront 2014 was the same. It was like, holy shit, you know? And this is the same way. So it makes sense, as you said, that, you know, the cost of making something like that must be through the roof.
Totally. And it's understandable that developers feel like, or publishers feel like they need to recoup costs that are otherwise, like, quote unquote, lost by not inflating the cost of video games to match their production costs. But the approach that developers or that publishers, I want to make it, I'm going to step aside for a second. It's necessary to make a distinction between developers and publishers. Publishers are going to be the ones who often dictate the price of things or the implementation of cynical microtransaction elements. Like, developers are generally not the ones who want to do those things. They just want to make the game. But they're the ones who are receiving the tax for these cynical financial maneuvers that are generally like not their choice. It's just something that they have to agree to because the publisher is telling them to do it.
Right. Yeah, and speaking of threats, I saw there was a Kotaku article about a Twitter account of someone claiming to be an EA developer. Did you read about this at all?
Yes, I did. I did.
So there was there was someone on Twitter who had already had a Twitter account. It wasn't created during this controversy. Who had been previously, I believe, claiming to be someone who worked at EA, mm-hmm. And during this controversy, began tweeting out that they were receiving death threats on account of the negative publicity and the way that the fans were reacting to this whole loot box thing, or loot crate thing, you know, whatever you want to call it. And this got picked up by, like, national news. It was everywhere. I think Vice reported on it, CNN, multiple major news outlets began reporting that EA developers were receiving death threats directly from, you know, their fans, basically.
Right.
And then through some investigative journalism on the account of Kotaku, found that that person actually did not work at EA and just made it up.
Right.
Which, you know, but the sad thing is even though that turned out to be fake, like fake news, basically, the sad thing is that I wouldn't be surprised if EA developers were receiving horrible messages, you know?
I have no doubt in my mind that they're absolutely receiving death threats.
100%. Like, they did three developers from DICE did an AMA today on Reddit, which is like, I don't know if they had planned to do that beforehand or if this was like Christ. The most poorly timed AMA, know, and it was trending for a while on the front page of Reddit, and you know, they within 30 minutes they hadn't answered any of the questions because it was just too much, you know.
Yeah.
And then their responses started to roll in, but their responses were getting downvoted so much that no one could see them. You know, like within a second of them posting their response to a question directly in regards to, like, okay, we know that there's an issue with these loot boxes. How do you plan to fix it? How are you going to work with EA to fix this? You know, they were responding as best they could, but they were getting downvoted so hard and so quickly that that no one could see the responses, which is crazy. And, you know, in this whole thing, really, like, one of the other major news stories that came out of this was that their original response to someone's Reddit post calling them out, you know, for having spent $80 on the game and then not having those major heroes unlocked that they wanted to play as, they had a response to that post, and people downvoted it to hell. and it became the most downvoted post in Reddit history. I mean,
crazy.
I did a video on it yesterday or 2 days ago, at the time of posting that video, it was at like 451,000 downvotes, which is
that's crazy.
It's insane. Like and that's just, I think, obviously people just jumping on the bandwagon. You know, there's not 451,000 outraged EA fans, you know, or people who are going to buy Battlefront 2 using Reddit. You know, it's just people who were linked to it from other sources because it was being displayed for everywhere. It's like, hey, look what's going on over here. Everyone's downvoting this. Go downvote it too, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Jump on that, you know, so.
Yeah, well, okay, so this person on Twitter claimed to be an EA developer.
Right.
And would, basically defend the honor of EA periodically or other game development studios periodically from a position of knowledge and authority, right? And yeah. I feel like part of the reason that someone like that might do something like that is because they're filling a space that is vacant because developers are incapable of communicating with their audience for a variety of reasons. EA is incapable of communicating with its audience because it's too fucking corporate to do so effectively.
Mm-hmm.
I think the post that you're mentioning as being downvoted more than any other Reddit post in history was a particularly boilerplate response.
Yeah, they all seem to be, and that's exactly right. It's so corporate that everything, no matter what, feels like a canned response.
Yeah, it's inhuman. And on the other end of the spectrum are the developers who would love to communicate with their audience, but their audience is both indifferent to what they have to say because what the developer has to say doesn't jive with what the audience expects of them. And developers are probably often limited by agreements, NDAs, or their own fear for their jobs and health that they can't be honest.
Yeah. Well, no, exactly right. I mean, no EA dev is going to go on Twitter, like a true EA developer is not going to go on Twitter and be like, yeah, fuck these guys, you know, I can't believe they made us do this. Like, fuck them, right? You know?
It's so unrealistic to expect that. But I mean, like, there's currently like a conversation happening around whether or not there should be published information about what engine is being used by a game, because players often feel like they understand what the engine brings to the table and associate it with particularly negative attributes, and will often write games off entirely because of the engine in use. This is often true with Unity. You'll see this kind of conversation happening around Unity in like Steam reviews or on the forum or whatever for a particular game. And it just shows it both like an obvious ignorance to how game development actually works and an unnecessary choosing of sides by the audience. And like, how does a developer like engage with that? Like, how can they possibly like work with someone who feels like they understand this person's field entirely without ever having participated in it personally?
Yeah, it's almost impossible for them to navigate through that without offense, you know, without offending someone and without feeling like almost impossible, you know, which is why I feel like we don't see it a lot. I mean, there's obvious like darlings like what's that studio that does the Witcher games?
CD Projekt Red.
CD Projekt Red is like so in communication with their fan base that I think that's the success story, right? Up from that, you know.
Well, keep in mind that CD Projekt Red also says things that fans want to hear. Like, I'm not saying that they're lying or anything. It just happens that what CD Projekt Red has to say is what a fan wants to hear. Like, CD Projekt Red in particular is famous for saying like, we don't put any anti-piracy in our games because it harms players, so all of our games are anti-piracy free. And obviously players are going to be stoked about that because worldwide players are, I mean, anecdotally from what I've observed, players are fucking poor, and so they're going to pirate games from time to time or exclusively. And so any developer that is going to say like, we're against that shit, they're going to be seen as like cool.
Exactly.
You know,
they kind of are the cool kids at the party. You know, see, they got the leather jacket, they got the shades on at night.
Mm-hmm. They also make like good games, so they can afford. I mean, look, like, I'm not going to minimize their efforts, but like, let's imagine CD Projekt Red made bad game, or not bad games, but middling games. They probably wouldn't be so like plain spoken about not putting anti-piracy in their games, because wouldn't be selling tens of millions of copies of every game.
They would be standing alone in a room with like two people in it and saying, hey, we don't have anti-piracy over here, and then someone just goes, oh yay, you know, just like, and like a balloon falls.
Yeah.
someone lights a little popper.
Yeah, man. But like, this person on Twitter is filling a space, and people want EA to be a person who's communicating with them, but then they also hate EA because EA is a corporation. There's no winning, and I'm not gonna like defend EA. Like, I think EA sucks as much as the next guy, but like, I just don't think that the games audience and game publishers are being fair to one another, and that's how we end up in situations like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. So you've never really engaged in loot box, loot crate. Have you even had like a mobile game, like an app that like, I know, I don't think you ever played Pokemon Go or anything, but like, did you ever get into anything on maybe even on mobile where you were incentivized to drop a little extra cash or some bonuses?
I just like, I see through that like X-ray specs, dude. Like, I played Pokemon Go and it would ask me to buy like Pokeballs or whatever the fuck, but whenever I was faced with that blockade, I would just be like, all right, well, I'm just gonna put this game down because I fundamentally disagree with that.
Right.
I have probably bought aesthetic items in games that didn't necessitate them, because I know for a fact that I bought one of the special crates that PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds was selling during their competition.
Mm-hmm. And that just gave you, and it, the stuff in PUBG is all aesthetic, right? It's all just outfits.
Yes, you're right. Yes, so you in playing PUBG, you get points for victories and playing the game and stuff like that, and then you redeem those points for randomized crates, just like any other loot box system. But when they were having this competition, I think it was called they were having some competition, and during that period, they were selling crates that had battle royale themed items in them.
Like schoolboy and schoolgirl outfits?
Yeah, and Yakuza shit. And I got one of the crates, or I redeemed my points for the crate, and then you had to buy a fucking key to unlock the crate. Stupid.
Okay.
And so it just sat in my inventory for a while, and then the other day, I'm just gonna fucking buy this key and get this crate out of my inventory. And it gave me a fucking, like, extremely expensive skirt. And I didn't even want it. Like, I think that was the most recent thing that I purchased, was a key to get this crate out of my system.
Which ended up having an item worth
$300.
Holy shit. And how much was the key?
$450.
Oh my god.
So good return, but
yeah.
Looking at like an item in a game as like an investment.
Right.
That's just fucking gross. I don't want to do that. And that's stress.
Well, I have a similar experience in it, but it's not in PUBG.
Okay. What is it?
So the only game where I've been sucked into that, at the top of this episode, I mentioned FIFA and how they have FIFA Ultimate Team.
Mm-hmm.
They have pretty much an identical version of that in the NHL games, because NHL games are published by EA. Same thing.
Right.
And I've been playing, you know, I got into hockey, you know, professional hockey in like 2014, and I've watched it a lot since then, and I've become a big fan of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And I've played the NHL game since then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an NHL 15 that I found out about Hockey Ultimate Team.
Mm-hmm.
And it's essentially the same thing as FIFA Ultimate Team. You buy packs for players. And in those packs, you get players of the standard variety. And then throughout the cycle of the game, you know, these games come out once a year around September when the hockey season starts. And throughout that the game cycle, they release special cards throughout that, culminating with the end of the year or the end of the season, which is when they release players part of the team of the year, right? And they're like the highest rated players in the game,
right?
So when I started playing Hockey Ultimate Team, I was like, okay, I don't need to buy packs. I can play this without it. And then I realized you really can't. You actually have to, if you're going to compete competitively online in Hockey Ultimate Team, you really do have to spend money. It's really hard to not to. I mean, there are certainly players that can do well and succeed with like not spending any money, because when you play matches online, you know, you get coins. It's very, very similar structure to all of these games. Battlefront, it's all the same thing. You play online, right. You get coins or credits, and you can redeem those for packs, loot crates, what have you.
Right.
In the NHL games, it's packs of different varieties, cards of different varieties. And I got totally sucked into it. By NHL 16, I was like way into it. And I got really into like the market of it, which is, you know, the PUBG market is like very similar. The Counter-Strike Global Offensive market's very similar with the trading of like knife skins and the gambling of such.
So wait, you can sell your character card or player cards?
You can sell them on their online auction house, which exists in the game, but not for real money, just for additional coins, right, that you can use to buy other packs or players.
Right.
So yeah, the difference is being with PUBG or the Counter-Strike, you know, you can sell your shit for real money. And the way to subvert that with NHL is there are online NHL communities, especially on Reddit, where you can sell your cards for real money via PayPal with traders, which I did. Right. I was doing that in NHL 16, which is crazy.
I actually encountered that with my item. It popped in my inventory. I listed it on the store at like $300 because I ended up selling the item. And this person tried to friend me that I'd never seen before, like immediately after I listed it. And I looked at their account, and they are just an item purchaser who will arrange a purchase with you, and then you pay them externally, and then you just trade them the item afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's exactly how the NHL market works, because there's no real way to communicate. You have to pretty much do it on a external service. So Reddit is where I used to either buy or sell or trade players when I needed to. The auction house works as well, but if you're trading for money, you do it there.
Right. Okay.
So I got really into it during NHL 16, and then NHL 17 came out, and I was like, my interest started to taper off. Didn't spend that much money. And then now we're at NHL 18, which me and you played recently together.
I did very well.
You did very, very well. Now I'm not interested in spending any money beyond what I paid for the base game. But, you know, because I'm an EA Access member, I did get access to, like, a version of the game that gives me a free pack every week.
Okay.
And so last week I opened my free pack, and it gave me the most expensive card in the game.
Wow.
Just by, pure luck, randomness. It's all random and luck. It's just gambling, you know?
Right.
And so I got what's called the Evolution card for Sidney Crosby, who's like major superstar of the league.
Okay.
And that card sells for about, I want to say, maybe $400, real money.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I thought I did well with the skirt.
Dude, it's crazy. People go, I mean, like, the thing is, though, is that I doubt I could ever sell it for that much. You know,
okay,
because he sells for almost 1 million coins of the in-game currency, and people sell coins, so I base the price off the coins, and the coins are can be pretty expensive, you know,
right?
So, anyway, yeah, it's just like it's just that same thing. It's like I totally see how people can fall into this like cycle of it's a gambling high. It's exactly that.
Yeah, so I want to talk about that in particular. So you're talking about player cards that these players ultimately are like a collection of stats, right?
Yes.
Like
Yeah, exactly
in
that.
sports games, when a character has is better or when a character is different, like ultimately they're just better or worse at certain mechanics. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, exactly that. I mean, in NHL, for example, how it works is players, their each card has a rating, right? And the higher the rating, the better that player performs. So, for example, this
Is it just
evolution's
one number or is it a bunch of numbers?
It's one base number for their card overall, and then they have a bunch of separate stats underneath. Like for this example, this Sidney Crosby card I got is a 91 overall, and then it's broken down like speed is like 92, a shooting is like 93, and then so on and so forth. So that's a highly sought after card because of how good it is and how well it performs.
So that's interesting. When I think about these loot box systems, I think about games that have them in the actual game, and you get that you get randomized items from playing the game, and you can't purchase them externally, or maybe you can, I don't know. But like Battlefield has had like a crate system since 3, I think, maybe even Bad Company
No, I think it came
two.
out with three. Well, I was actually reading about that today because I didn't, I didn't, I don't, I think I opened the free ones that they would give you. I never paid for them, which you could, but how they did it, which is I think a little bit more acceptable than just what a lot is what's going on nowadays, is that when you would open up a Battlefield 3 battle pack, right? You would never get an item you already have.
That's tight.
Yeah.
So, and also, like, I think there's an important distinction between items and perks or stats. Like, Battlefield or sorry, Battlefront 2 specifically operates in stat boosts. Like, you get a card that gives your character a higher running speed, or like they heal faster, or their rocket launcher has a bigger blast radius.
Right.
Like, all of these things are like binary improvements. They are absolutely better than the item or character without these cards, right?
Yes.
And I look at Battlefield, and you open a battle pack and you get a new gun or a new grenade type or something that fundamentally functions differently.
And it's
And
like 90% aesthetic, right?
well, it's not necessarily aesthetic as much as it is like functionally different. It's not better or worse. I mean, in some cases, like there are like calculatable differences that are improvements, but like ultimately the item functions differently. Whereas like in Battlefront, like if I get that card, I'm equipping the card. Like it would be stupid not to equip the card because you're worse without it, right?
Right.
But if I'm playing Battlefield and I get a different assault rifle, maybe I don't like that assault rifle because it's more wily, or like it's not as powerful shot per shot, or like I like a slower firing rate, you know? And I think that that is an important distinction because if I get randomized items, then I might end up with an item that like I won't use because it doesn't appeal to me personally. And if I buy a battle crate and I'm buying weapons, I'm not necessarily becoming a better character or better like performer. I just have access to more stuff to like experiment with, right? But if I buy loot crates in Battlefront, I'm objectively becoming better. And like if I play against another character who is the same class as me, and that person has all of these cards that they purchased because they can afford to and I can't, they're going to be better than I am objectively.
Right.
And that sucks.
Yeah, it doesn't make the it forces an unfair battleground. It's forcing a situation where those who don't have the means to buy into the game and invest into the game are not going to be able to functionally succeed, right? I mean, it's certainly possible, but given a situation like, as you said, where you get into a firefight with someone who's spent $200 extra on the game and has completely perked out their character, they have the immediate advantage.
Yeah. So like perks by definition are improvements, and then but guns are not, or weapons or items are not necessarily improvements. And right. I think that's important. Like I would be totally fine if Battlefront 2 was selling crates of new weapons, as long as they weren't just like, this is the super blaster and it's better in every way. Yeah, I think that's an important distinction
for sure. You know, and I think maybe during playing Overwatch, I might have bought a round of loot crates there, and those are purely aesthetic. They offer no increase in attack power or anything. It's all just different looks or spray icons for your character, different emotes or whatever,
which that's is fine.
The same as the new Call of Duty. The new Call of Duty has a loot crate system as well. I feel like it's like every game is going to have a fucking loot crate system if we continue.
Well,
on
the new
path.
Call of Duty falls for the same trap though, because I mean, like you're getting. I don't know if you can. I don't know if you can purchase loot crates in that game or not.
You can't at this stage, but I think it's going to be available in the future, is what I've heard.
Okay, and those are. Probably, well, I can't speak for that game. If like in previous Call of Duty games where you're gaining access to weapons as well as perks, you know, that's a mixed bag. But if you're just buying perks, fuck that.
No, yeah, it's not like that. Call of Duty is just like Overwatch, essentially. You just get emotes and different outfits for your characters.
Okay.
You don't get, you get like different skins for your guns. As far as I can tell, you don't get anything that provides you an advantage over other players.
So another thing that I think is interesting to note about this stuff is that there are the amount of currencies and the different stats that you develop and how those all relate to gaining access to certain items, and how you acquire those items through improvements and stuff like that and money and all this shit. They all are like, they loosely mimic management simulators, which are themselves games, but they are not the same, and they're not fun because they're related to actual money. So like, whereas in a management simulator, I might say like, oh, I'm going to change this stat just because I want to see what happens. And then I might lose, you know, my currency or whatever that I accrued by playing the game and whatever, that's part of the game, you know. When they externalize that those systems and make them like something that you deal with outside of the game, like in Battlefront, where I'm dealing with multiple currencies and potentially my own money, then like there's a whole like shrewd, stressful approach that I then use because I'm actually dealing with money, and it's not fun like it is in a management game. You know, it, like you can see this is gamifying the leveling system, but like it's not. It doesn't feel good.
Right. There's a disconnect. Right?
Yeah. It feels bad, actually.
Yeah, and who wants to feel bad when they're playing something that's basic, you know, escape?
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if Nintendo starts doing fucking Mario loot crates or something. Did Mario Run have loot boxes? I never played that. That was their free-to-play running game.
I don't know. No, Mario was like a purchase one thing and then that's it. It was like a $10 flat rate. I don't know. Like, I'm curious how this, because it's going to level out. Like, this, the other thing to note is that, like, the game is released and characters cost an absurd amount of points or whatever the fuck to unlock. And then EA issued a public apology and then dropped the price on the characters by 75%.
This is a matter of. Was it 75?
I thought 75%.
Oh, wow.
It was like, but this isn't a matter of days of release. Like,
yeah,
they're just testing the waters, dude. Like, if they had any vested interest in actually pricing this stuff out, they wouldn't have backed down so quickly, you know?
Yeah.
So once all this stuff levels out, I don't know what it's going to be like, but I also wonder what the next post-purchase monetization attempt is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting world, you know, that we're slowly creeping towards. You know, we've both been playing video games for our whole lives, pretty much, and we've both of us really have seen the major horizons in the past 20 years. I don't count fucking Atari, before, you know. I don't count that shit. I count. I'm starting at Nintendo. That's where I track like gaming for me. I know there was some shit that existed before then, but throw that out.
You were zero. You didn't care.
Exactly. I was negative.
I just think people should just fucking chill out, dude. Like, it's all like, sure, this, like, you can step back and look and like, oh, a corporation is taking advantage of its audience, and you're not wrong, but like, it's just video games, man. Like, just chill out, man.
Well, and EA has been getting hit hard with this stuff for a while now, because they've, I think, rightfully have, you know, so in some cases, but they have fucked up in the past few years by taking wrong steps. And I would never say I was a victim of their system, you know, even though I did buy in and invest heavily to these fucking NHL games, and I did spend, you know, decent amount of money. Mm-hmm. I would never say I was a victim of that. I would never say that, but I feel like it took me a while to realize that, like, this is a waste of fucking money, you know, and I can enjoy the game without it. But the organized rage in the way that people are piling on right now makes sense in a lot of ways, because the disenfranchisement of gamers has been existing for a few years now with the way that the corporations have treated everyone.
Well, yes. So there's something to be said about feeling like these randomized loot systems are effectively gambling, and how they manipulate and take advantage of people who are weak to gambling. You know, like, that's a reasonable critique. I am certain 90% of the people who are upset about these systems are not looking at it from that angle. They're looking at it from an angle of a corporation in the games development community is asking me to spend more money than I want to, which is like one of the more popular complaints in games in general. So I'm not going to say like this is a super minor issue. Like, there is something to be said about mental health and like caring for people who are not caring, but trying not to exploit people who are gamblers. But as far as like gamers feeling disenfranchised, like, I feel like that's part of their identity, and yeah. I don't know that we're ever going to escape that. And I think that people who feel particularly disenfranchised by EA Games and want to say year after year EA Games is the worst corporation in the world, get a life, dude. Like, find something else to care about.
Yeah.